God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. If you're on Zoom, you can raise your hand and somebody will chat with you.
Hi, Nick. Welcome.
Hey, James.
James, welcome.
Anybody else out there in the first 30? Awesome. Welcome, everybody. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This is the foreword to the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentications will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This evening, we're going to be discussing step 12, part one. Please welcome our panel. We have Jake and Ebony. All right, I'm going to read the first paragraph, which will be on page 89 for anybody following along. And then Jake is going to kick us off and then kick it over to Ebony, and we'll just keep going back and forth as the readings go along. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. On page 89. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Jake?
Thanks. Jake, non-alcoholic.
Jake.
So the way that I was sponsored was I asked my sponsor to sponsor me, and he read the big book to me. He did it with the Cleveland method. And by the time we got to this, I had already read the doctor's opinion probably 200 times, maybe plus, you know, because part of the process in the beginning was he made it very apparent to me that only alcoholics can help another alcoholic, right? And when I came to him, I knew that I needed help, but I didn't know what kind of help I needed. I didn't know what was going to be expected that I do. And so some of the stuff that he suggested I do didn't come right away. It was, well, let's meet. Let's talk about what's going on. That's exactly what he said. He said something in a meeting, and when he said that, it was at the Maryview Hospital. That was the meeting that he would go to to go find newcomers. Because he was prospecting for sponsees, and he spotted me. He had never seen me, and I must have looked kind of weird to him, or very apparent that I needed help. But he said something in a meeting, and by that time I had gone to that meeting. I knew that I needed something more, and I was attracted to what people were saying at that point. Finally, it took 2 years to get to that point. 2 years of going in meetings. And what he did was he said he carried the message in that meeting. He said something that had depth and weight, and immediately there was a little something above his head that was telling me go talk to him. But after the meeting, he beelined it right for me with a post-it, and it had his name and his number. And he said, "Here's my name. I'm Steve. Here's my number. Give me a call, and we'll talk about what's going on in your life." He didn't say anything else other than that. And that was the beginning that I needed. And the pain and the suffering combined with all of that, made me want to talk to this guy. It wasn't until much later that I realized what he'd been doing with me all along. It says here, frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. So part of the suggestions that I give guys, these are the things that I do. I call at least three alcoholics a day, because I know that they're going to be the bright spot of my life that day. You know, my wife, my daughter, bright spots. Sure. Yeah, absolutely. But there's nothing, there's something different when I'm talking to another alcoholic about just life. Right. And at first I didn't do that. At first the suggestion was call three alcoholics, and I didn't do it for a year and a half. I was like, I don't want to do that. I don't want that frequent contact with you guys. I'll just go to meetings, you know? And I didn't think you wanted frequent contact with me, because not many people did, you know? I didn't even want frequent contact with myself. I hated the sight of myself, you know? So that was something that I did a year and a half later after him being my sponsor. And I realized, and when I started doing it, my world opened up even more, right? The fellowship opened up to me more, even more than I ever thought. And the phone calls are very, very important. How else am I going to get frequent contact with you guys? I got to be able to pick up that phone and dial those numbers. And one more thing on that paragraph, it says, it works when all other activities fail. Everything else is a lot of things have failed for me. One of the things that whenever I feel like I'm off the beam, first time I ever felt like I was off the beam, it took me months before I talked to my sponsor about it. Months went by. And finally, after just going to meetings, saying things in meetings and not feeling like I knew what I was talking about, I was just regurgitating what I was saying, what I've heard. I didn't have a working knowledge of what I was saying. I felt like a hypocrite. I felt like way off the beam, spiritually unfit. And after a few months went by, I finally talked to my sponsor. I called him up. I was like, "Hey, man, something's not right." He's like, "I know." So I've been waiting for you to talk to me about it. I was like, "Well, what do you think it is?" And we always go to the triangle. What am I not doing in the triangle? You know? And so we always go to the steps. And it's usually my ninth step. Right. I got to do some work on my ninth step. The other question is part of the fellowship part, right? When is the last time I had a new guy in my car? Right. And it seems like simple, but it's not something that I always question. Like, when's the last time I volunteered and willingly like went after a new guy and got him in the car, you know? So working with others, has opened up quite a bit for me. And all that they're asking me to do is share my practical experience with this and not being afraid to tell them, "Hey, I screwed up doing that. Screwed up a lot down here. This is what doesn't work. This is what does work." And so that's all they're asking. They're just asking for suggestions. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you. Hey, y'all, I'm an alcoholic. My name is Ebony.
Hey, Ebony.
I haven't had a drink since Friday the 13th, November 2015. My home group is the Cornerstone Group. We're a big book study that meets pretty much across the street Saturday nights at 7 p.m. So please, you know, if you're looking for a great big book study, stop by. I have a sponsor who I talk to, knows me well, knows when I'm telling the truth, and also knows when I'm being delusional enough to pull me into the truth. And I have the privilege of working with others by carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous and taking them through the steps using the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I say all that because it's kind of hilarious. I'm a girl who showed up here who had absolutely no plan of being sober. Absolutely no plan, no care in the world of anything that had to do with others. It was all about me when I showed up here. It was how can I feel better the fastest and go back to drinking without consequences. You know, that is who shows up on her own power, you know. And I'm so grateful for the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and for the people that carried this message to me and made a place for me to show up on that Saturday at my very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because what they did, they were carrying the message to a drunk like me who had no idea what my problem really was. You know, I learned from other people's experience what my problem was. And so I think that's extremely important to talk about when I'm talking about step 12, because I showed up here and I had nothing to offer. But the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous is as I take these simple actions and I start putting this stuff to work in my life, I get changed from the inside out. You know, and so I love how it starts that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking. Like, that's a big promise right there. Ensure immunity from drinking. I'm a girl who drinks when I don't want to. I'm a girl who drinks on accident. I get drunk at all the wrong times and all the right times too. You know, and for me to hear something ensure immunity from drinking seemed like you were liars. Like I couldn't believe that that would ever be something that would happen in my life. And so I love that it tells me that it's intensive work with other alcoholics. And for a long time, I used to think that meant like me saving people. Let me go out and save the masses because I've done everything wrong that this chapter tells us about. And I'll go into details later. But I love the fact that intensive work with other alcoholics today looks like, hello, how are you? Intensive work looks like, yeah, let's sit down and read today. Intensive work looks like me calling my sponsor. A lot of the times I'm the person that needs the intensive work. I need someone to intensively work with me. And so I love this call to action is for me to carry this message to other alcoholics because I can help with no one else can. You know, and that's what was done for me. Today, someone asked me at work, so do you plan on doing stuff like this for the rest of your life? And I was like, do I plan on giving back freely what was given to me that have saved my life? Absolutely. Which is crazy. I still like, I can't say a million, but quite often every day I have this moment of who did Alcoholics Anonymous turn me into? Like, how did I become the person that cares about connecting with the newcomer or that cares about connecting with the person that's still suffering at Alcoholics Anonymous? Because there are a lot of us sitting in these seats. I was one of them who was stone cold sober and I wanted to die. And someone said, we have steps for that. You know, and so I love this at the very end. Remember, they are very ill. I am selfish, self-centered, not as much as I used to be. And my pride and ego wants to just really, especially when I'm talking to someone who's new to Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm like, why are you acting like this? Why can't you just jump into the book? What is taking you so long? Mind you, I was the girl who was sponsoring myself and had the wrong literature for a very long time because I thought Al-Anon was short for Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not, you know, but forgetting that was me. I refused to take free literature because my pride was so my brain was using my pride against me to separate me from a solution. Yet I get removed from the drink long enough that all of a sudden I'm like, well, why aren't they just doing the steps? Why don't they just have a sponsor? Why aren't they going to the right meeting? So I love this reminder. Remember, they are very ill, just like me. Just like me. You know, and that I can secure their confidence when others fail because I know what it means to be a real alcoholic. I know what it means to feel like I'm cursed. I know what it means when nothing else has ever worked. And then followed by this whole paragraph of promises. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives today. Yes. No, most days it is. I'm not going to lie and say 100%, but most days it really is for me. And it's usually in a conversation with a fellow alcoholic, whether it be someone with as much time, less time, more time, where I hear the solution to the problems that I've been searching for that day. And it's like, man, I'm so glad I talked to them. Or when I talk to someone and I can just tell them the worst, most dark thing I've done, just randomly new stranger at a coffee shop. And they just look at me and they say something like, oh my gosh, I've done that too. You know, so I love these promises right here in this paragraph, but there's so many more promises coming up. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing.
Thank you both. We're off to a great start. All right. The next reading is going to be on page 91. See your man alone, if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his.
Yeah. So the reason why when I hand my number to a new guy, my name and number, and I do exactly what my sponsor did with me. Let's get a cup of coffee so we can talk about what's going on in your life. It's a very open-ended statement. It's not, hey, do you want victory over alcohol right away? You know, like I don't need to come at him like that. It wasn't done with me, and I know for certain that that had been done with me several times, and I, you know, that's, yeah, so, as soon as somebody did that with me, I'm done with you, you know. So that it's a simple invitation. Let's just go meet for coffee or go get some donuts or whatever, and let's just talk about whatever you want to talk about, you know. The goal is to get them to talk to me. And not try to fix all their problems in one conversation. It's, gosh, it can get overwhelming, right? And if they're, you can tell pretty early on how painful it is for someone. You know, I want to find out where the heat's coming from. You know, why are you even here? You know. But it's got to start a little bit slow. Got to start a little bit slow. Eventually we'll get, you know, we get to those, nitty gritty parts. What helps to open up is to share my story and not try and overtake the conversation. But I have to be told precisely how to do this. So the first thing I do is I just start opening up and telling my story. And then the next time we meet, tell me what's going on with your story, you know, what's going on in your life, you know, because I feel like it gives them an example of what we should be talking about, you know, and it shows them, hey, I am you, you know, I'm just at a different stage in my, you know, in the solution. If it wasn't for my sponsor doing that with me, I probably would have found every opportunity to not any opportunity to not go back and talk to him, but he opened it up and he made it comfortable by sharing, divulging information of himself. I'll still be in a meeting, you know, we frequent meetings together, me and my sponsor. I'll still hear something that he'll say about himself. And after me, I'm like, dude, I still can't picture you doing all those things, you know? he still surprises me with some of this stuff that I didn't know about him, you know, because the person I see in front of me is not the person of those stories, you know. And so when I'm sharing that stuff with someone, I hope it does the same thing for them. Like, hey, you know, I'm just as irrational. I'm just as, I can get just as hopeless. I lived in fear. I was homeless at one point, you know, I stole from people, you know, was a horrible father, husband, brother, son, I thought I was like this gung-ho military guy. I was a horrible airman in the Air Force, you know? So telling on myself is a good way to soften someone up a little bit so they can feel comfortable. The goal is to build trust, right? The goal is just to build trust. And how else am I going to do that if I'm just always talking down, you know? Some of y'all might have known me in the, you know, when I first started getting sober. I was a bit rash, you know, in the meetings. The first time I got sober, I would tell people all the time, I'll never drink again. Like I was that kind of, you know, dry guy. It took a long time for the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous being applied in my life for me to see what my purpose is. My purpose isn't to tell you how sober I am, or so that when I walk in there, like, oh, that guy's got it together. No, my goal is to show you what I do in order to take care of these character defects that I have. Right. My goal is to hopefully have some humility about it. So I have to. When I'm working with a new guy, and sometimes you get new guys too, though, that they want to do all the talking too. And it's like, all right, yeah. And that's fine too. There's a place for that. But sometimes I have to tell guys, like, I've heard your story. Let's talk about the solution now, you know. Let's get to you ready to hear the good stuff? You ready to get to the good stuff? Because all I'm hearing is a lot of complaining. Let's get to it, you know. But this paragraph is all about the soft opening, the giving them the opportunity to talk. Yeah.
All right. So I have a big star right next to this paragraph because it's the beginning portion that I reference a lot to people, mainly because, you know, the book promised me clear-cut directions of how to do this stuff. And I remember thinking and freaking out when my sponsor was like, you can raise your hand now. And I was like, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to say? This, it tells me exactly what to do. Clear-cut directions. Things never made sense to me until they made sense. It was just a big snap into place for me. For the longest time, I would read Working with Others in meetings, and I used them as, this is how people are supposed to work with me. And I would judge you on how well you were working with me. And I remember just thinking, like, one day, maybe I'll be able to. And my old timer at my first home group, he said, the whole thing about AA is an attitude adjustment, and you really need one. He was right. You know, I think about Don Major talking about attitude being the angle of approach. You know, and for a very long time, my perspective was, how are you going to save me? How are you going to approach me? How are you going to carry this message to me? And then one day, magically, I start reading and my perspective was completely different. That angle of approach was, this is how I get to carry this message. This is life or death. You know, it's fun. There's some laughter here, but this is life or death. And so I love these clear-cut directions telling me, tell them enough about my drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences. Because I remember when I first, before I showed up to Alcoholics Anonymous, the people I loved the most talking to me about my drinking and me looking at them, knowing that they could not relate. their message, whatever, and they meant everything when they were saying it, but I knew they could not understand what it feels like to feel crazy because I keep drinking no matter what. And they're telling me things like, if you want to stop, you'll stop. If you put your mind to it, it'll be okay. And me knowing that was not enough. And then I show up here and other people are talking about their experiences and I know I'm in the right place. And what a magical experience it is today that I get to talk about that. That I can say, like, I know what it feels like to steal money from your dad's change jar and walk to Walmart because too many of the employees at the ABC store know what I'm going to buy and know what I'm going to drink. So I have to take my time picking locations so I could pretend that I'm a normal drinker. These are things that I swore I would never talk about. You know, at the beginning of the 12 and 12, it tells me that taking these actions will make me usefully whole. And then the first page that we read in this chapter, it tells me that I become uniquely useful. And I love to put those two things together. Taking these actions have made me usefully whole and uniquely useful. You know, and the uniquely useful part is that these experiences are what I can use to open the door for someone else. And maybe they might find out what it means to really suffer from alcoholism like I did. You know, and this, I don't have to run the conversation. It doesn't have to be an hour long. I can just match. I have lots of random stuff. Someone made a comment talking about, oh, that's a well-used book. It is. It is. And I love it. It's my favorite. But in here, I have be a thermometer. You know, be a thermometer. Just match whatever temperature I'm given. I don't have to persuade anyone. I don't have to argue or debate. I just sit and have a conversation. I did all of that wrong at the very beginning. I just tell you all the mistakes I've made. I've told people they were going to die if they didn't listen to me. I've told people that I didn't think they were real alcoholics. I have told people that they had to prove to me that they belonged here. I'm saying this because, like it's been shared, it has taken time for God to soften my edges. You know, it has taken time for me to relate in a more soft, more gentle way than who first showed up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the crazy thing is, it's not up to me to get people to stay or get sober anyways, because a lot of those people are still here, even though I made those mistakes. Even though I had those learning opportunities, we won't say they were mistakes. They were. But I love this, getting him to tell some of his, because the most important thing is for me to listen to them. Thanks.
Thank you, Bo. All right. Also on page 91, when he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, but begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him, from your own experience, how the queer mental conditions surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't, at this stage, refer to this book, unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that he possibly can if he is not too alcoholic, but insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself.
I usually give them the textbook definition, you know, and that's in here. But it usually comes a little bit later, for me. One of the things that I try to do is give the guy time to realize what he's getting into, right? Give him a little bit of time before I get in the big book directly with him. I'll give him something to do, you know, hey, why don't you call me every day? Whatever time, and I'll find a time that works for them. You know, it doesn't have to necessarily fit my schedule. And I tell them, hey, if I can't pick up at the time, I'll call you back. That's just to get them in a rhythm, you know, because a lot of these guys, I was like that, man. I can't even follow a calendar, you know. My wife tried very hard to keep me in line with calendar dates and everything, and I still screwed up. I still screw up on those right now. But so I give them something to latch on to, a little bit of work, like just call me. If you can call me every day, we'll get in the big book, you know. But I'll still meet with them one-on-one, but we won't get in the big book until, you know, give it a few weeks. I really need to find out if this guy is serious or not. And I have some conversation. I still have these conversations with these guys and say, hey, you know, if this is not what you want, I need to find somebody that wants to sit down there, you know? So if this is what you want, then show me, don't tell me, show me, make those calls, call me. And I didn't hear from you. Let's go to meetings together. Get them. Yeah. I got to get them in my car. I got to take them to meetings. I got to be able to smell you. You know, I got to be able to, sometimes I can't even tell over the phone how you're doing. Some of these guys are pretty good pulling the wool over your eyes, you know? So I got to see you. I got to talk to you on a daily basis. Let's talk. Let's talk about what's going on. During that process, I find out from them if they have a desire to stop drinking, right? It only has to be an inkling. It doesn't have to be like, okay, this guy's gung ho. I'll work with him, right? I love that question. Do you have a desire to stop drinking? I think that we should only have one flyer, and that should be on the flyer. One flyer that says, do you have a desire to stop drinking? And then whatever else you want, fill it in there, you know, because that can apply to everybody, any and everybody, you know? And if that person, if that guy in front of me says, I do have a desire to stop drinking, then that's all I need to know. You don't need to know what the definition of alcoholism is. You don't need to know the mental twist right away for me to, for you to get started. Do you have a desire to stop drinking? I remember I met with a guy and we went to, Panera, right? We get our food and we're sitting down and we're just talking, right? I think this is our first meeting. No, yeah, this is our first meeting, but we had been talking on the phone. And I wasn't getting a warm and fuzzy about him having a desire to stop drinking. So I just started asking him questions and come to find out he was lonely. And he was also, he had other problems. He had other issues. It had nothing to do with alcohol. And I told him, like, do you think you're an alcoholic? It says here, I wrote a note here, ask him, do you think you're an alcoholic? Do you have a desire to stop drinking? What happens when you drink? This is what happens when I drink. Explain it to him. This is what happens when I drink. And, he understood where I was coming from. He finally understood. He's like, yeah, I think you're right. I don't belong in AA right now. I was like, if you do, call me. We'll go to more meetings. It may develop into something like that. I don't know. But I don't want to waste your time, because if you have a problem with pornography or killing baby chickens, I can't help you with that, you know? But I can. My primary purpose is to help another alcoholic with powerlessness of alcohol in our lives, right? I'm not gonna be able to help you with finances. Don't ask me. I'm not good with my, you know. So it's important to find that out early on to make sure that that guy understands what we're doing here. That's all I got. Please.
Reading this, and I just laughed at the, if you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, but then also further down, telling me to be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic, which is a gift of this program that I have a filter today, that once I am satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, it doesn't have to come out of my mouth. I used to be the person that used to think and say, And sometimes it was just say, not think at all. And so I like that distinction that my job as I'm talking to someone new is to find out as much information as possible to see if they meet the criteria of being a real alcoholic. You know, I don't have to solve the puzzle for them, but I can relate better. And so reading this, and the word mental comes up twice. And I'm so grateful that this mental twist is mentioned and this queer mental condition surrounding the first drink is mentioned in both paragraphs. Because for someone who's brand new like me, I am definitely not thinking this has anything to do with the mental, because I'm smart, I'm intelligent, I'm an educator, I got whatever, whatever, whatever. However, I can't stop picking up that drink. And I can't stop obsessing over that drink. And I don't realize that my main problem centers in my mind. I don't know that. I just feel absolutely crazy and cursed. It was God's fault, by the way. God cursed me and my mother. Those were the two people who I blamed for my alcoholism for a very long time. I took inventory. Don't worry. That resentment's gone. I said that kind of like passionately, but I love this because it was a learning process. You know, it tells me in more about alcoholism. We learned. Like, I learned by relating to other people's experience what this mental twist was and how to turn it into everyday simple language. That no matter what, my brain is using everything around me to convince me to take a drink again. And I don't even realize it. Sometimes it's how I feel. Sometimes it's how I think you feel. Sometimes it's because I want to. And sometimes it's because I'm breathing. My brain says drink. And I think that's normal. And so I get to sit here and have those types of conversations. And I love that it reminds me that pretty much only an alcoholic will understand me immediately. I've had conversations with normal drinkers, or one of my closest friends from early sobriety. We had the same sponsor. We would drive from Virginia Beach to Norfolk, and we would just be kind of talking and telling our stories. And I remember talking about having seizures and thinking it was my Kindle's fault, but it was really because I was withdrawing from alcohol. And you know, alcoholics are laughing. He's driving and she's just looking like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. Turns out she wasn't an alcoholic. Still one of my closest friends. We talk often. But she wasn't an alcoholic that could relate to, even though I'm having seizures, I'm still drinking. Even though I don't want to, I'm still doing it. And so this reminder that if they're alcoholic, he'll understand at once. Because a lot of times there have been lots of conversations where people look at me and they're just like, no. And that's okay. You know, it doesn't, but I'm more useful to someone that's a real alcoholic because this is life and death. And then just going to quickly go to the very end. If he insists that he's severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. I love this reminder that I can let people be wrong. I don't have to convince anyone, even if they are more real than I am. I don't know. I like to judge people, if I'm being honest, like judge your alcoholism against my alcoholism. I'm a bigger alcoholic than you are. But this reminder that if he can still control his drinking, let him go. Let him. Maybe he can. I don't have to convince anybody, even though it's hard. It is so hard when I think someone is a real alcoholic and they've satisfied all of my checklists and I just want so bad for them to get sober, to remember that I'm not God and that everyone deserves their own spiritual experience and their own journey to find God. Because that's exactly what I needed. I needed every single drink. I needed every single bridge burned. I needed every single broken promise, every breakup, every tear, every cry out before I was willing to do the work of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I try to spend my time convincing them, I may be saving them. I may be not saving them. I may be blocking them from a spiritual experience that they need to save their life. Thanks.
Thanks. All right. Taking it over to page 92. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of body and mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question if he will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he live by spiritual principles. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There is no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your own convictions are. Jake?
So the first question I asked on the spiritual matters is, do you pray? And I'll just ask them that. That's usually a good test of, I don't pray. I'm like, okay, that's fine. Are you willing to pray to something? You don't even have to put a name on it. Are you willing to say this? Just get down on your knees and say, help me. We're not putting a name to it. Help me with my alcoholism. Help me be a better husband. Help me be a better father. Whatever it is their roles are. Help me with my alcoholism. You know? I would say 95% of the time, guys are willing to do that. Yeah. The guys that aren't, that's fine too. I don't push it. Like, I get it. Yeah, that's fine. But I usually preface, or, you know, I'll say this at the end. I'll say, well, if you want what I have, you got to do what I do. This is what I do. Just think about it. And you're willing to consider a simple little prayer, right? And if you're willing to consider it, then that's good, right? And then, I mean, that's pretty much the last time I talk about prayer, other than when we get to the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer, you know? And then every morning, if the guy says, yeah, I'm willing to pray, when he calls me, hey, man, did you get your day started right? Yeah. All right, what'd you do? I got down my knees and said that prayer. And then that's the first thing I that's the first suggestion. Well, second suggestion, call me every day. Then after they do that for a while, you know, then I say, all right, I ask them the prayer question. All right. And then they start incorporating the prayer thing. And then I say, all right, you want something to read in the morning? Like, yeah. All right. Doctor's opinion. Read the doctor's opinion. So when you wake up, get down on your knees, say that prayer, read the doctor's opinion before you call me. Right. Get them in that rhythm, right? And at first, when I was suggested I do that, got it. I was like, how do I find? I got so much to do. I don't want to do any of that anyway, you know. But then another tactic that a lot of people don't care for, but it worked for me, is after they start making those calls, and then I'll say, hey, did you get your day started right? Like, no. I was like, well, call me back when you do, and I don't hang up on them. But the next time he called me back, I was like, hey, so from now on, do that before you call. And if you don't, if you say I didn't do it, then I was just going to say, call me back when you do, and then click, I'm going to hang up on you, right? And it worked well with me, because then I was like, oh, I don't want to get hung up on. So I started doing it with my sponsor. I'm like, oh, and he's hung up on me several times because I did not do what I said I was going to do. Another thing before we get in the big book. So a lot of the stuff that we're talking about is I eventually want to get a guy in the book. Before they do that, I ask them three questions. Hey, are you willing to, what is alcoholism to you? Are you an alcoholic and what does that mean? The second question is, are you willing to go to any length for victory over alcohol? Right. I remember when Steve, my sponsor, asked me that, I was like, oh gosh, what is he going to do? What is he going to want? Sure. Yeah. All right. And then the last question is, are you done? Are you done drinking? Do you have a desire to stop drinking? Are you done? Let's get now. And then we get in the big book. But before we even get that, it's like, are you calling me every day? Have you been reading the doctor's opinion? The doctor's opinion takes all of what we're talking about and wraps it up in the 8 to 10 minutes every morning. Really, really well. There is a pattern of behavior in all the stories that the doctor talks about of these guys who came in with a common peril, used a common solution, and their lives were transformed, right? And there's a pattern of behavior in there. And it all revolves around hopelessness, self-imposed hopelessness, and self-diagnosed, right? The doctor couldn't do anything for these guys, hardly anything. The only thing that he could do is accurately or come up with some theory as to why we drink, which is very helpful, very, very helpful. But it has to be self-imposed at my own hand. And the self-diagnosis that I've been doing it to myself this whole time. So the hopelessness, the getting dry, I have to give these guys time to get a little dry, right? Give them a few weeks. And then the 12 steps, we can get in the big book, right? So it takes a few weeks to almost a month for me to get into a big book with a guy where we're meeting every week, and I'm reading it to him, and he's asking me questions. I'm sharing my spirit, strength, and hope. But all that, all along, we're talking every day. We're meeting one on one still. We're going to meetings. He sees me and how I interact with people. I introduce him to people. That was very helpful when my sponsor took me to meetings, and he's like, "Hey guys, this is Jake. Hey, this is another Steve and another Steve, and oh, there's three Bobs over there." You know. And he always said, do not leave without getting these guys' numbers. Get their numbers. So he helped me get integrated, and he helped me to see that it's not good enough to just come to a meeting and sit in the back, you know. And he never once asked me which God I prayed to. You know, I found out which God he prayed to because he invited me to a memorial service for his son-in-law. And that was the only time I realized I found out that he was Catholic, you know, but he didn't say you got to pray to my God. So anyway, that's all I got. Thanks.
I love this reminder to hit on the hopelessness of alcoholism because I have a solution, you know, and the fact that they use the word doomed, because that's exactly what I am. I am doomed if I'm a real alcoholic. No matter what I do, no matter how I try to arrange the puzzle pieces of my life, no matter how I try to manage well, I am doomed to drink again if I don't have a solution. And so I love this reminder because today I do have a solution that I can offer. I just think a lot when I read. Actually, I think a lot, period. However, as we're reading today, this, let him ask you the question, if he will, of how I got well, how I got better. And then I was thinking, people usually ask me about the God part before they even ask me about how I got better. They ask me about the God and the steps, or is this religious, or how can I do this without the God? And so I love this reminder that it tells me just to tell him exactly what happened to me. And when I say exactly what happened to me, I say, I thought all this stuff was dumb, but I did it anyway. I hated the God idea. I wanted to find a way around it. I wanted to skip certain steps and do it my way. Turns out it worked better for me when I had someone with experience take me through this process. Turned out it worked better when I followed the steps in order. It turned out it worked better when I was honest as I did this. All the things that I thought I didn't need to do. None of it makes sense. I love to tell people that. None of it makes sense. And it makes less sense the longer I stay sober. I don't know how this is working anymore. Besides the fact that I'm connected to a power greater than myself by following these directions. You know, and so I talking freely about it is, I don't know. Let's see what happens when we do this. Let's just do this and let's see what happens with all of that. I had a reminder yesterday with a person that I've worked with the longest that when it was time for them to do their third step prayer, I was like, all right, just read this part. And I dismissed myself because I wouldn't pray with people until I was like 7 years sober. I would start praying with other people. Like that's the best I got, you know, but the great thing about this is not for me to solve for anybody. I can't even solve this God relationship with myself besides just taking the suggestions and seeing what happens. And I like this idea, this reminder that I don't have to believe in a God. I just have to be willing to believe in a power greater than myself and be willing to live by spiritual principles. And when someone says that, I don't know what I think, but I don't think honesty, hope, faith, courage, integrity. When I hear spiritual principles, I don't know. I think like martyrdom, virginhood, clean language, all the things that I find boring in life. That's what I suggest. That's what my mind said spiritual principles are. But I don't think like being honest is a spiritual principle on my own. And what a novel idea that is. Alcoholics Anonymous gave me that. And so it's so much simpler than my head makes it out to be. And that's something else that I get to share. Just stop thinking and just do. Thanks.
All right. Wow. This has been very quick. I'm going to just read one more of these readings. And if y'all want to do like a minute or so each to wrap it up, sound good?
Mm-hmm.
All right. On page 94, outline the program of action, explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. Make it plain he is under no obligation to you, that you only hope that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Make it clear that he is not under pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions. Right. Jake, I'm gonna wrap it.
Yeah. By the way, my sober date is July 29th, 2015. And my home group is the Into Action Group. We meet twice every week out in Suffolk. So if you're ever out that way, come out and see us. It's a pretty good meeting. But pretty good. It's all right. So that's why I give these guys these little things, you know, just trickle it in here and there. I don't come at them hard. And I don't take a personal. I also don't take a personal. If they decide that this is not what they want to do, at first it was personal. I was very offended by all the times I got fired. And I knew I was fired when they just stopped calling. I was like, stop calling. What did I do wrong, Steve? Like, you were willing. You were willing to meet with a guy, and you were willing to give to them what was freely given to you. And that's all this is. It's just a guide to share this. You know, these are the ups and downs that I went through. These are my experiences, and I hope that it'll help you too. You know, and if you don't want to do it, trust me. If I see any meeting, I'll give you a big hug. I'm not gonna, this guy, you know, I'm not gonna talk smack about you, I'm not gonna take it personal. I'm not personally responsible for your sobriety in the first place. It's for you to decide, you know. And so that helped me. That helped me when I finally came to those realizations that just a guide, and I thump on the Bible, but I don't hit them over the head with it. You know, that's all I got. Thanks.
Thanks.
Outline. That's the Bible. I meant Big Book.
Outline the program of action. That's a reminder for me, is that I can't think my way into becoming recovered. I can't sit in a meeting long enough to accidentally get recovered. I can't talk my way through becoming recovered, that there are things that I must do. And this reminder that I am the person that's responsible for taking this action. No one's going to do it for me. No one can do it for me. And I try to say that in a loving way. Sometimes I'm successful. And then this reminder that, you know, if my talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, perhaps I've made a friend. Because that's all I've ever wanted. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous for friends, but I wanted to feel that I had friends. You know, and that connection, that heart to heart, that language of the heart that we speak in Alcoholics Anonymous, is the connection that I needed to realize I was not alone. You know, I needed the power of the fellowship to carry me to the power of God that changes me from the inside out, that I found and got connected to by taking the actions. I'm going to keep saying the words actions because I don't like to take action. I want things to magically happen. And I learned that I had to do some work to for it to happen in my life. And then the last thing I wanted to just harp on, maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. Like, if I love, I have a t-shirt that says Beloved Agitator. And I love to agitate people on the question of alcoholism. You know, because the truth is, if I'm sitting at home thinking, well, maybe I do drink like that. I really can't stop. Maybe there's another way to live. Then I might have found the place I should be, which is the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll be lucky if I get the solution. Because as it tells me over and over again, hundreds, thousands nearby are dying every day from this disease who will never get the chance to find a solution. And how lucky and grateful I am today for it. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing.
Thank you both for a wonderful meeting tonight. We're going to pass the seventh tradition baskets. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffered. A word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements?
James?
Oh, sorry. I'm James Alcoholic. My home group. This home group. What actions? We're on step 12, part one, just finished it. Next week, we'll do the part two and finish the big book. Then the following Monday night, November the 3rd, we're going to have dinner and speaker here. Potluck, bring a dish. More dishes that are bought, more different foods you'll see. We're going to start that at 6 o'clock. The speaker is at 7. And it's Jack D coming in from us from Baltimore, Maryland. Now, it's Halloween. We got these nice, pretty orange brochures, leaflets, whatever you want to call them. There's a whole box of them up there. Leaflets. Like, take them. Turn to your home group. Pass them out.
Leaflets.
Bring a guest. Bring whoever. The more the merrier. We usually have anywhere from 100 to 150 people here for that. But we got room. Bring them on. If we ain't got room, we'll make room. Thanks.
Thanks, Jay.
Lydia.
My name is Lydia. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lydia.
And I'd like to welcome to the Saturday morning brunch bunch 37th anniversary celebration. This Saturday, they're celebrating at Old Donation at 9 o'clock at Fellowship and Breakfast and 9:30.
So there's going to be brunch there, right?
Brunch at the brunch bunch.
Nice. Got two more in the leather jacket first, then.
Thank you, Kathy.
I'm home is half measures and November 4th is election of three. So on November 4th, half measures will avail you none.
Nice.
I'm Randy. I'm not.
Yes.
Hi, Randy.
This coming Thursday, my home group, West End over on West Sand, is having a workshop. It's the family afterward. We will have four speakers that will speak on their experience with the family after getting sober. So come on out. We'll have some snacks. Starts at 7. And have an ask it basket at the end. The following night in Portsmouth at the cabin, which is October 24th, from 8 to 10, there will be a Halloween costume party. They're going to have food. Family and friends are welcome. It's been said to be a really good time. Hope to see you guys there.
Thanks.
Shaking down alcoholic. I've got a pretty pink flyer. We are the In Action group. We decided this year we're going to do our first annual gratitude dinner. I think we got the idea from another group up in Hampton. They're doing one too. And we're going to have a panel of three. And the panelists are Shonda, Carlos, and Shelly. Shelly H, Carlos R, and Shonda G. And they are going to be sharing about traditions and their experience Strengthening Hope with the traditions. That's going to be Friday, November 14th this year, 6:30 to 7:30 is dinner. Bring a dish if you wish. Bless you. And like James said, you know, the bigger the spread, the more options, right? And hopefully Jill show up with her wonderful cheesecakes that she cooks for us every year. They're so good. They're so good. And it's not really a true dinner unless she really provides that. So appreciate that.
I like that. You're not wrong. You're not wrong. I'm there.
All right. Bring Albert, please. Please bring Albert. The workshop starts at 7:30, ends at 9. We are going to do an ask a basket after that. So, or, you know, right at the end. So if you have any questions, really, you know, let's grill these panels and see how much they know. It's gonna be at Glebe Episcopal Church. And if you want, I have extra flyers. If you want somewhere, you can take a picture.
Sweet. Thank you. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or are in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Awesome. We have literature available. It is right over there with those lovely pumpkin orange flyers for our event in 2 weeks. See a home group member if you need a book. The pamphlets are free. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available right here after the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. If you're shy, you can always send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Just a quick reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. And we do a meeting after the meeting. All are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Cafe Stella, just up Colonial Avenue. In closing, let's thank our wonderful panel again. And after the Lord's Prayer, feel free to come up here and thank them yourselves. But before the Lord's Prayer, David's going to read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
Everybody, I'm an alcoholic named David.
Hey, David.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got.
See to it that your relationship with him is right. Great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. We have a nice big closing.
Yeah, we do. It is nice.
Yeah.
Quick moment of silence. Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Shake it and break it.